the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, if you think about retirement, retirement today is probably a lot different than it was several years ago. Number one, people are living longer. And number two, the investment markets have changed considerably. They become more complex when you consider rules about Medicare, Social Security, and even complexities in tax planning, from Roth IRAs to distributions and required minimum distributions you are required at age 70. So we're going to talk today about rethinking your retirement with an author of a book called Rewirement, Rewiring the Way You Think About Retirement. Its author, Jamie Hawkins, joins me on the program. Jamie, let's talk about your book, because in it you set out 10 principles that the average retiree should begin to think about. But more importantly, as you illustrate in several of your articles, we may be programmed to save for retirement. We know what to do, put money aside, put money in a 401k program. But when it comes to retirement, spending that income, we're not as well prepared for it. So let's begin with that.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on. And yeah, so that's, you know, kind of why I wrote the book. And part of it was, you know, I saw a lot of literacy, a lot of data that actually by the time people get to their mid-50s, 60s, they actually do know how to save a little bit. But we're actually not that bad at that. It takes a little while, but we do figure that out. And most of our, you know, laws, rules, retirement plan today, defined contribution plans, are really set up to help you save. They're really not designed to help you spend down money. And so it really does require us to totally change the way we think. And that's why I said we need to, you know, kind of change the way we think about retirement planning and rewire our brains a little bit from an accumulation mindset to a decumulation mindset. And there's a lot of behavioral biases that exist out there that come into play here. We often hear about anchoring or home bias, which are two very similar things, which basically tell us once we have something, we struggle to give it up. So we get a lot of retirees that don't want to spend down their savings, don't want to spend down their investments, and try to live off of interest only. And in today's interest environment, that's very challenging to do and meet your lifetime goals.
You know, the college did a survey on retirement income literacy, and the results were 3 out of 4 retirement age Americans failed the quiz on how to make their nest egg last throughout their retirement. Let's talk about that, because I think what most people don't realize is you take an average couple that retire at age 65, they could spend 20, 25, maybe even 30 years in retirement. In fact, for women, there's a 50% chance that the woman will live into her 90s.
Yeah, so what we've looked at, and we've been doing this literacy survey since 2012, and basically wanted to test Americans on both their basic financial literacy, then their retirement income literacy, and there was a huge gap between that. People understood some basic concepts of financial literacy, but actually did surprisingly poor on retirement income, how to make that money last a lifetime, what to do with Social Security, with Medicare, with annuities. And really, there's some encouraging things there, too. That's why there's a whole market of financial advisors, products, and solutions out there to help consumers with this, because they really appear to be ill-equipped to do it by themselves today, you know, both from a literacy standpoint and from, you know, just a basic time and understanding of, you know, kind of all the steps to take. They really do need some help.
You know, let's talk about something. Well, there's two things that have really changed regarding retirement. Number one, as I mentioned, people are living longer. And number two, the investment markets have changed. And probably the third, let's talk about that, Jamie. At one time, at least in the days of our parents, you know, you went to work for a company, maybe you spent your entire career with one company. You don't see that as much today in the gig economy. But let's say you spent your entire career with a company, you retired, you got somewhere anywhere from 60, 70 to 80% of your income as a pension when you retired. Companies did away with that. You still have them at the government level, but some people call that into question in the next decade. Let's talk about what that really was, because what a company really did was they had a pile of money they put aside for your retirement. When you retired, They went to an insurance company and they said, you know, Bob is age 65, his wife's age 60. What will you give them the rest of their life? It was really annuity. So let's talk about annuities as a way of securing a predictable source of income, because there's not too many places that you can find that today.
Right. And really one of the ways that I like to talk to kind of clients and consumers about this is I go out and I say, you know, you have some lifestyle goal you want to accomplish in retirement, right? Some spending goal. And we figure that out. We go through it. We get a number. And then you really say, well, how much of that do you want to guarantee? How much of that do you want to make sure is there every year in retirement? And you actually kind of let the individual pick that, right? What's the amount they want to guarantee? Well, then there's only a couple of places we can get guarantees in the world, right? For income, we can go to the government. We can get CDs from a bank. Or we could go to an insurance company and we could get, right, a product there. They can guarantee. And that's really about it. I'm kind of generally speaking, there's three main ways. And then if we look at those three today with interest rates, you're going to see that annuities are going to provide higher payouts. We're going to be able to guarantee more income for you than really the other two we're going to be able to today. So if you want more income guaranteed, then we're going to be looking at annuities. And, you know, professors, academics, researchers have loved annuities for years. And one of the reasons is, you know, mortality pooling, mortality credits. It can do things that other investments just cannot do. It's a unique product. And as you mentioned, pensions, right? The distribution period of that was an annuity. Social Security is an annuity. Things that people love, right? Guaranteed income for life. That's an annuity. For whatever reason, the name scares people away. And there's, you know, some reasons for that. There are much more complicated annuities out there too that work more like investment products. Now, those still have a role in the world, but I think they kind of fog the mirror for some people where they're thinking, oh, this has to be really complicated. Well, annuities can be very simple and very beneficial in a retirement income plan.
And let's talk about how that, you know, sometimes people are worried about an annuity. Okay, you've locked your money. Let's just take somebody that has an IRA from a 401k program. There's $100,000. They put it in an immediate annuity, $100,000. They are going to get guaranteed income for the rest of their life. But Jamie, they've locked their income up or their principal up. Address that issue in ways that you counter that.
Yeah. So what we like to talk about there is something, what people are thinking about is they've lost liquidity. They've lost the ability to access this money today. Well, there's also another concept out there. We'd like to talk about true liquidity. And true liquidity is really what you can actually spend. And if you were sitting $100,000 in an investment, you can't actually spend that $100,000 today. That money is being sat there for growth opportunities. So by spending it, you then have no growth. You have no income in the future. So that money is actually set aside. You're essentially self-insuring by investing. And so your true ability to spend is actually going to be less than it is if you move that money over to an annuity where your true spending or your true liquidity will actually go up. And that's a concept that you know, is very important, but not well understood yet, that most people still look at, do I have a liquid asset? But if that liquid asset is set aside for something, it's not true liquidity. It's still locked up, right? It's locked up for a future use, while the annuity then provides us a constant flow of cash, and in your example, right, for life. So we know we can spend that amount each and every time we get that annuity payout.
We just talked about an annuity where you basically can't outlive that income. Let's talk about some other non-traditional planning tips, which number one, include working longer. Number two, perhaps working part-time. Number three, tapping into a reverse mortgage. And number four, delaying your Social Security. We were recently working on a case with a woman that was getting ready to retire, Jamie, and we showed her, instead of retiring at age 66 and taking her Social Security, if she worked two more years, she would get the equivalent of $500 more a month in her Social Security, which was equivalent at today's interest rate of having an additional $200,000 of capital that could produce that extra income.
Yeah. And, you know, working longer is, you know, probably the single most beneficial thing someone can do. There's also the reality, right, that that's incredibly challenging for some people. But let's, we can kind of go through those topics. One of the very interesting things is just this last year, there was an amazing research paper actually done by Stanford, which talked about basically the benefit to working longer versus saving more, right? So they're saying, what happens if we work 1 year longer, right? What does that do, right? What happens when we work 3 years longer? And what you saw is, it was absolutely amazing. Working a couple months longer was like saving for 5 years before, right? The whole time period. And that starts to make sense. If you're saving 10% for 5 years, basically what you've accumulated is 50% of your income over that year. And if you work 6 months longer, wow, actually that's, same thing. It's half your income. So that little bit of working longer, and as you said, it gets to increase Social Security, it gets to do all these very powerful things there. So working longer is very beneficial. As you mentioned before too, the gig economy, working part-time, Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, right? Or finding a passion that you care about, that does a lot of things. It, one, keeps you engaged in a meaningful activity, and we see that has very powerful benefits on your health, your mental wellness, your satisfaction in retirement, and it also brings in some income. And even just a little bit of income coming in can be very beneficial. Social Security, deferring it, the math is just very beneficial compared to other returns and interest rates out there. With an 8% increase in benefits as you defer past your full retirement age, that 8% is then adjusted for inflation and lasts for your entire life is just such a powerful benefit. In fact, you cannot buy that on the market anywhere. Nobody would sell you that on the private market. It's that good. And part of that's because Social Security includes about 94% of all working Americans under it, and the government's able to kind of pool that risk together. And so it actually works very well. And then the last one you mentioned was home equity and reverse mortgages. That's something I talk about in my book specifically. And a lot of people have that same hesitation as they do with annuities to reverse mortgages. For whatever reason, I think the name's always been bad too. I don't think people gravitate to reverse mortgages. It's a little funny. I support two very unpopular products, but when they're used appropriately. Now, none of these strategies or products are for everyone. But home equity is America's largest asset, right? For the vast majority of retirees, that is their single largest asset. So in my view, ignoring that as part of a retirement plan is just not okay. We have to consider home equity as an asset. And reverse mortgages are a government-created, backed, and insured product by the FHA. Right. It's not a scam. It's not something that, insurance companies are even doing. It is a government backed product that's then delivered by individual lending companies. Some of the largest and most reputable companies in the country do this. Quicken Loans, which is essentially the number one mortgage company in the country now, does reverse mortgages. This is not a scam. Now, there are costs associated with its borrowing. So you do have to understand that when going into it, but it can allow you to tap into your home equity, allow you to age in place and not have an ongoing required monthly mortgage payment. You don't give up ownership of the house, right? That's a big misconception. I've done literacy work on this one too. And the other thing we've seen is using home equity earlier in retirement is actually better in many cases than using it as a last resort. And this goes back to a very just kind of general thought here. But let's say the market drops 30-40%. We get a big correction out there. Would you rather borrow from your house at 5% or sell your stocks when they're down 30-40%? The answer is pretty clear, right? When you look at that, you say, oh, yeah, I should probably borrow from my house at 5%. And then you can even pay back your reverse mortgage, right? If the market goes back up and you're feeling better about your situation. So there's a lot of strategic things out there. But again, it's review all this stuff right inside of a plan, holistically, deferring Social Security, working longer, tapping home equity. And if we have a plan in place that takes a holistic view, we're going to be in a much better place than if we kind of react to everything behaviorally, right? And just react based on fear and biases. We really need to try to overcome them as much as possible.
I want to just illustrate a point on Social Security. Let's just take a couple and say the husband's Social Security at full retirement age at 66 is $10,000. And I want to illustrate this point. If you take it early, as many Americans do at age 62, Instead of getting $10,000, you get $7,500. And then waiting to age 70 instead of $10,000, you get $13,200. So there is a gap there of almost $5,000 to $6,000. And Jamie, let's talk about the fact that, 85% of survivors on Social Security are women. Let's talk about what this might mean for a retired couple. Husband usually passes away first. Women have a greater longevity of deferring that Social Security to age 70, what it means for the surviving spouse.
Yeah. And what we talk about that is what we say maximizing the survivor benefit. So when you defer the larger of two benefits in Social Security, what you're doing is you're creating an income stream that's going to last for the longer of both spouses' lives, right? So you can't just think about husband deferring your benefit, what it means to you. You need to think about what it means because one of the two benefits will go away, right? If you're talking about a spouse when the first one dies, the larger of the two benefits essentially will continue on for the survivor. So if you have the kind of the traditional American, you know, at least with retirees today, where a lot of the spouses, as you said, it's an older male that worked, the younger female might have worked sometimes, but doesn't have a huge benefit herself under Social Security, is going to be claiming the spousal benefit, which is generally half of what the worker's benefit is. So when the worker dies, that's going to be the bigger benefit, and that's going to continue for that surviving spouse's entire life. So that deferring it to 70 is so powerful, especially for any of those widows out there who become incredibly reliant on Social Security at that point. And remember, right, part of their benefit is going to go away. One of the two always goes away when one dies, right? And at that point, can you get by? Did expenses cut? Maybe not. So maximizing that survivor income is very important.
Jamie, what is it about, let's say, insurance products? Because every professor like yourself that I have interviewed here on the program on retirement planning, they are in favor of using, for example, insurance products, annuities, alternatives that you just mentioned, reverse mortgages. But if you look at the financial industry, especially Wall Street, they're completely opposed to these products. In fact, a prominent money manager actually has ads is saying he'd rather go to hell than sell an annuity. So what is it about the difference between professors? And I'm talking about Robert Merton, a Nobel laureate at Harvard University. He's in favor of them. Why the disparity between you professors at college that teach retirement income planning in the financial industry itself?
Yeah, well, part of that's a little misleading, right? The financial world, right, annuity sales as an insurance product, right, are hundreds of billions of dollars a year. So not enough people use them, but they're not unpopular in the sense that they're not being used. We do want to see more of them out there. But, I mean, we're talking, massive amount of money moves into annuity products every year. The other thing is the one maybe famous, you said, asset manager out there that doesn't like annuities, was also a heavy investor in annuity companies himself. So while he might not like them, he was reaping the same rewards from them. I always hedge that one a little bit too. It doesn't quite look like he actually followed that up with his own money. but one of the things is academics like simple insurance products. When we model those, they work well. They increase longevity of portfolios, and they can do things that, investable assets with a tremendous amount of risk can't do in retirement, right? You just simply cannot guarantee income from the stock market. You can't do it, right? Dividends are great and people love them, but even dividends, you cannot guarantee, right? Even the companies that have done them 20, 30 years every year, then all of a sudden, they're not doing them for 5 years. That happens. So dividends, very useful retirement income tool, and should be a part of the planning process, just like annuities, insurance should be a part of the process. And again, academics like them because we test them. We put them into portfolios. We back test them. We forward test them. We run Monte Carlo. And the reality is, all the kind of academics, where we keep coming out to the same result, that it improves retirement income security by transferring some risk. That doesn't mean you fully, go into annuities, fully into insurance. We still want you invested in the markets too. But it does have, by building a floor of guaranteed income, allows you to reduce typically your withdrawal rate from your other investable assets, which then reduces the impact of down markets on the sustainability of your portfolio. And that's why insurance products are so powerful, because they create right certainty in uncertain times.
Let's talk about an underutilized strategy, which is converting part of their IRA to a Roth IRA, and the difference that may make, especially, you know, let's take an individual case where somebody retires at age 66, and we know at age 70 and a half, the government makes you take a required distribution every single year out of your IRA. So, you know, at age 70, you could be facing a higher tax bill. Let's talk about Roth conversions and why they can play an important role of creating not only tax-free income, but keeping you in that lower tax bracket.
Absolutely. So really, when we're saving for retirement, we're given kind of three choices from a tax perspective. We can have a traditional IRA and 401k, we're going to call that kind of tax deferral, where we put something in, we get a deduction today, and we defer taxes on the growth and what we contributed till we withdraw money out. Now, we also just have plain after-tax brokerage savings. We take money home, put it in the bank. Everyone's familiar with that. We pay taxes, and we really don't get any tax benefit. And then what we have is what we would say is Roth tax savings. Roth now is after tax. We pay taxes on our money first, then we contribute it to a Roth IRA or 401k, and then that money grows tax-free, assuming we hit certain kind of withdrawal characteristics, which for retirees, 5 years and past age 59 and a half, then we get to withdraw that whole account income tax-free. It doesn't show up as part of our adjusted gross income. It doesn't push us withdrawals from that into a higher tax bracket. And so it's great to have that in retirement because, right, we're paying less taxes than in retirement because we're not withdrawing more money. The other interesting thing is it doesn't impact the taxation of our Social Security benefits. So that can be very beneficial. And then our Medicare premiums, assuming that most people in retirement are paying Medicare premiums for Part B and D, that all of a sudden, right, that's impacted by your taxable income also. So we can then be taking money out of Roth IRAs and not increasing our Medicare premiums and not increasing the taxation of our Social Security benefits. So it's very valuable to have a Roth. You also mentioned a rule at 70 and a half for most of our taxable accounts that are going, or tax deferred accounts are going to be subject to RMDs, required minimum distributions, which requires us to take out a portion of that each year, and then it's included in our taxable income. Well, Roth IRAs are not subject to RMD rules at 70 and a half while you're still alive, right? You don't have to take them out. And what I say about that is that allows you to spend the money when you want to, not when the government tells you to spend the money. People love having that flexibility, that they're not forced to sell assets, that they're not forced to take money out of their IRA or 401k when they don't want to. It gives you added flexibility in addition to some of the tax benefits we described.
And when we talk about some of these tools, I want to talk about putting this all together. I was surprised, you probably have this at the tip of your fingers, the number of individuals that save for retirement but do not have a retirement plan. Because all of these things that we just talked about, maximizing Social Security benefits, annuities, a reverse mortgage, making sure you have enough income to last throughout your retirement, working part-time, all of them are incorporated and work best when coordinated with a retirement plan. So you know exactly what your income is going to be. You know exactly what your taxes are going to be. It's all coordinated. Let's talk about the importance of having a plan.
Yeah, and so we actually see the majority of retirees have no plan at all. So there's some data that says around 56% have no plan at all. Now, even that 44%, many of them don't have a written plan. So then in my thought, it's usually probably in reality don't have a plan either. But yes, putting a written plan together is very beneficial. We actually see when people have a written retirement income plan, they're more likely to be satisfied about retirement. They're more likely to feel secure that they're going to meet their retirement goals. They're more likely to have an estate plan in place, long-term care plan. So by putting a written plan together, you really do improve your situation. Now, what does a written plan entail? Well, a written plan looks different from advisor to advisor, but really what you're trying to do is set out your goals, look at your assets, look at what you want to spend, and then figure out how you're going to spend money down over the course of retirement, and then some mechanism to see how you're doing over the course, right? So you actually watch that, you review it, you have annual meetings and make sure that you're on track, or if you start falling off a track, right, have some mechanism to revise the plan, have some flexibility in there. And this goes to, you know, one of my ways that I describe retirement income planning is that I describe it like trying to hit a moving target in the wind. And the target is your goal. What do you want to accomplish? And why is it moving? Well, it's moving up and back because we don't know how long you're going to live. And then there's wind because things are going to change along the course of retirement. Day one and day 5,000 in retirement are not going to look the same. Social Security, taxes, needs, goals, right? Public policies, they're going to change. Interest rates, markets, there's going to be wind. There's going to be things that cause us some change along the way, which means we can't just go in a straight line from point A to point B on that target. We've got to be prepared to have some flexibility and having a plan in place, right? That puts us on an arc and a trajectory to get there. That's how we're going to be successful.
And as we close, Jamie, tell individuals about your book, Rewiring Retirement, because it really addresses the needs of the 21st century. Because a lot of people are still, as we talked about, you know, they know how to save for retirement, but they don't know how to plan for retirement and living off that income when you're in the spend down phase and versus, let's say, the buildup phase.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I wrote the book because we have to make this mindset change that the greatest generation was able to retire with Social Security and pensions. And the next generation is going to have unique challenges of spending down their own assets, of creating their own income source from their savings. And that requires a plan. It is more challenging than it used to be. There's more risks out there, as we've talked about, longevity, inflation, right? Healthcare risk, long-term care. So building a plan that takes care of the risk, looks at your income, and looks at the income sources out there and strategies that can improve your situation. And so I kind of go through in the book those risks, some of the behavioral kind of hurdles we have, and then I actually go through a 10-step process of putting a retirement income plan in place. And, you know, often, though, I still say, you know, while, you know, my book gives you a plan, you should work with an advisor if you feel comfortable doing that, that advisors add value above and beyond trying to do it yourself. Now, that's kind of a personal decision in the end, what you're going to do, but I support that, you know, kind of wholeheartedly, right? Working with somebody who can spend their time worrying about your plan is very helpful.
And the name of the book, once again, Jamie?
Yeah, that's Rewirement, Rewiring the Way You Think About Retirement. It's available on Amazon, Kindle, all of those fun things. If you want more information on me, HopkinsRetirement.com. I'm a professor at the American College. And yeah, I just love this stuff. You know, want to make an impact out there and, you know, want to see more Americans living a secure retirement.
All right. Well, listen, Jamie, I want to thank you for joining us on Lifetime Income. We really appreciate the work that you're doing and a great, great book for those of you who have thought about you're looking for help and maybe you want to start with reading that book and then find yourself a qualified advisor. Jamie, thanks for joining us on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Well, that concludes my interview with Jamie Ferguson. I highly recommend if you're looking for something to maybe get you started on the way to retirement planning, it's an excellent book because the 21st century is a different century and you have to think about retirement in much different ways. Number one, you're probably living longer, so that means you're going to have to draw on your income over a longer period of time. Number two, we're dealing with a system today. We no longer have guaranteed sources of income outside of Social Security. Gone are defined benefit pension plans for the private sector, and mark my words, they'll be disappearing in the public sector in the next decade. And then, you know, the other thing that we're dealing with is investment markets that are more volatile, and we're still, even despite these Fed rate increases, we're still dealing with the lowest interest rates in recorded human history. I mean, if you retired in the year 2000, it was easy to find 7, 8%, maybe 6% at a bank, safe sources of income in the high single digits. That's no longer the case. On the day we're doing this interview, Treasury yields on 10-year Treasuries are just a little over 3%. Hard to believe, 2 years ago, they were down to 1.3%. So do yourself a favor. If you're 10 years away from retirement, 15 years from retirement, start with a retirement plan. If you're not going to do it yourself, find a qualified advisor. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.